Okay. Good morning. Let me start. So today I continue and hopefully I finish this short introduction to path integral, and then I start to discuss the application of those path integral method to quantum field theory in the simplest case, which is the Klein-Gordon field, or what is often called the scalar free field. So first, path integral continued. And let me first remind what we did last time. So we saw that we can, if you define the evolution operator for a quantum system as a function of the Hamiltonian, like this, and I defined the Euclidean evolution operator, which is rather a kind of density matrix like exponential, that's E of minus tau over h bar h with the same h, which in our case was just the Hamiltonian for a particle in a simple potential in one dimension. Okay. We saw that we can compute the matrix element of evolution operator, which are propagator k, which depend on q final, the time, and q initial, and some initial time, which we took to be zero, but which correspond to the matrix element between the position eigenstate at final position q final times u of t times the position eigenstate at initial position qi, and we defined a Euclidean propagator in the same way. By replacing u by u Euclidean, we saw that we can define this as a path integral where you integrate with some measure over all possible histories with initial conditions that q at initial time zero is q initial and q at final time t is qf, with a phase factor which is just exponential. Here is the exponential of an operator. It's going to be the exponential of just a number, which is I over h bar, the action or the trajectory q, where the action for a trajectory q is the integral along the time. So s is the intermediate time of the Lagrangian of q and q, where L is just kinetic energy minus potential energy. So here these are classical coordinates, the classical velocity, while here this is, these are operators. Okay, and the picture of that is that you integrate in a time-space diagram from q initial to q final, and you sum all possible trajectories with some some appropriate states. Okay, and the same for this, which is qf ue of tau u initial. It's the same thing, except that you replace time by Euclidean time, and here you get important phase factor minus 1 over h bar se q, where se of q is obtained by replacing l by some kind of Lagrangian Euclidean, and Le is m over 2 times q dot squared plus e of q. This comes from the rule of the game. Okay, so here you have an integral of e of q, but some Euclidean pass integral with q of 0 equal qi, and q of tau is qf. So you have the same picture, except that the time is now some Euclidean time, and that instead of having a phase factor, a pure phase for each trajectory, you have some kind of Boltzmann weight because it's a positive and bounded number. It's 1 over h bar. Okay, so this is for the just the matrix element of the evolution operator, which contains a lot of information because, in fact, it amounts to have a path integral representation for the wave function and the Schrödinger equation comes, and this is equivalent to having the Schrödinger equation for the states. Okay, so now what I'm first going to discuss is what about operators, which correspond to observable in the canonical quantization.
François, I'm a little confused.
Yes?
Can you go over really quickly why, when we have the Euclidean Lagrangian, we switch to a positive potential?
It comes out from the calculation I did yesterday. So look at what I said, or look at the lecture notes that you have from last year. It hasn't changed. It comes just from this trick of treating, considering the time is minus I tau in this transformation from ordinary time or Minkowski time to Euclidean time, which at that time is a mathematical transformation.
Sorry, the last time when you wanted to find this, you
yes.
found the propagator for yes. imaginary time, and then said this is related to action because this is just so all of this is just analogy.
This is all of this is calculation.
Yes.
So I did briefly the calculation. I don't think I will have time to redo it, but I can explain to you in private. But you do the calculation.
Okay. Yeah?
You write this, and you. It's the same calculation because you are just computing u of t or u of tau, which are just exponential of the same operator, the same Hamiltonian for the quantum system, but just here a factor which is purely imaginary, and here it's purely real. But the calculation rules are exactly the same. So you follow the steps, dot, 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 and at the end you end up with this for real time, and this for imaginary time.
So my question is would it have made any difference if you define your Lagrangian for Euclidean time minus that whole thing? Because you could have also done that.
Because you mean going instead of going from this to this, going from this to this?
No, that's your question? The second Lagrangian saying that Lagrangian is not your Lagrangian, but minus the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because you could have defined your Lagrangian to be minus that whole thing.
It's another choice of what you define.
The exponential here, you have a minus of action.
Yeah, but that's okay. So SE of Q, it just come out from working out how the high appears in the formula, and it turns out that you see, basically, these terms is it contains the dt. If you integrate over the time, you have this. This term comes out with an integral over time, and this term comes out with an integral over time times two derivatives over the time. So this is a term which is proportional to this term, gives something proportional to the time, and this term gives something which is proportional to one over the time in doing some just dimensional. Hence, when you do this transformation, the I factor comes here, there is an I factor, and here there is a 1 over I factor. It's just that.
No, I'm saying, would any physical, any physical concept would have changed if you absorb the minus sign of the exponential into the action. So you have an exponential minus 1 over h bar as the exponential.
You want to define this as an action and minus this as an action?
Actually, no.
No.
The first one is okay. The second one, the minus sign. Yeah, the minus sign absorbed into the action.
Well, in order to be fully consistent, you can absorb the minus sign in the action.
Yeah.
And then you check that it's equivalent to, you get the same formula with just one time, which can be complex, if you take minus SE and IS. Then it's the same object. Okay. Oh, it's an well, we can do it on the blackboard, but okay. So may I come back to this? Okay. So operators, at least self-adjoint operator, Hermitian operator, correspond to physical observable in quantum theory. That's one of the basic axioms of quantum mechanics. You can derive it from some other axioms, but basically one of the basic features of quantum. Okay, and we haven't done that yet. So let me first consider the case where I consider an operator, let me call it A. And A is just some polynomial of position. This is position operator. So it can be Q, Q squared, et cetera, whichever smeared function of Q. So basically, the function of Q is just means that it commutes with Q. So basically, A, Q commutes. Just that. So it's a position-like operator. And so this is A and let me just consider that this is some function of Q. And think of it, for instance, like a polynomial or some other things. Okay. And then you may ask, well, how can I compute the path integral with this? Let's do it in the opposite way. I will define a path integral with an object which depends on the position. So instead of considering that I have just this simple path integral, which depends just on the initial and the final, let me define some intermediate time. So this is time zero, this is time t, and let me introduce some time. I just have to keep my consistent notation. Let me call it some tau 1, let's say, t1, with t1 between the initial and the final time. And at t1, I insert a quantity which is this function A of the position of the particle in the path integral. Remember, this is a real number, fluctuating random number, random variable, at time t1. Okay, so instead of defining this path integral, I want to define a path integral, which is integral of a dq with the same initial and final boundary condition, the same phase factor, I over h bar s of q. But in addition, I insert a factor which is just this function a of q at time t1. It's t1, not t initial. Okay? So, what is it? Well, you can write this simply by decomposing the path integral into two terms. You first consider that you integrate from u initial from time t equals 0 to time t1. So you can rewrite this object as integral from q at zero to q initial. And I have a s of q. So let me write this as just a of q of t1, delta of q of t1 minus q1. Okay? And then I integrate over q1. I've done nothing. I've written this as fixing q of t1 to be q1 with some q1, and then integrating over q1 from minus infinity to plus infinity. So I fixed this to be q1. Okay. So I rewrite this as a first pass integral where q at t1 is q1. I have the same path integral, e of q e I over h bar s of q. Okay. I can do the same thing for the path integral from t1 to the final time where I have q final 1. Just be careful not distinguish one and I, and same phase factor, I over h bar s of q. And here I insert both the function a of q1. Okay. But now let's go back to the standard Schrödinger presentation in terms of states and operator of this path integral. So this path integral is just, well, let me write it in the opposite way. So let me, so this is q1 u of t1 q initial. This one is q final times u, and here you propagate from t1 to tf, so you get u of tf minus t1 u1, and here you have inserted the function a of q1, where a is a function. But of course, since this operator a is a diagonal operator, a of q1 is just the matrix element between q1 and q1 of the operator A of q. Since it commutes, u A q is just the function A of q. Just diagonal element. Okay. And remember, we integrate over q1. We integrate over q1, over, I mean, one dimension from minus infinity to plus infinity. So what is this? This integral times this. Well, you can rewrite this simply, for instance, by stating that instead of taking q1 and q1, I have a q prime 1, a delta of q1, q prime 1, and integrate over d q prime 1, 2. And here, so here what you get? You get just the integral, you get the identity operator. You get the identity operator, and here you get the matrix element of A between Q1 and Q prime 1. So this is nothing but, so this big path integral, the one I started here, is just the matrix element of between the final state QF u of tf minus t1 times the operator A. Now, this is an operator. Times u of t1 and sandwich between the initial state, q initial. Okay, so this path integral, when I've inserted q of t1 here, corresponds to this matrix element, where you have a product of a unitary operator here, A, and the final operator here. Okay. But now, it's useful to write this not in the Schrödinger representation for states and operator, but in the Heisenberg picture of states and operator for quantum mechanics. In the Heisenberg picture that you have seen in quantum theory, of course, and most probably before, in the Heisenberg picture, operators depend on time. And so for a given time, A of t is defined as, I just have to be careful not to miss thing. It's strange here. This is just an operator is defined as u of minus t a u of t, the Heisenberg picture. Okay. And the states, the states are just different. So you make this the similar transformation on states. Yes?
Over there, is it fine to write the second part of the thing to the left of A of Q1?
Yes.
On the right?
Here or here?
That integral is the thing on the left of A of Q1.
Those are integrals, so you can, those are numbers. You can, I just reorganize so that this part is to the right and this part is to the left. But I'm dealing with numbers and integrals, so everything commutes.
And A of Q1 does not take part in the integral?
Well, A of Q is a, here you have an integral where Q1 is fixed. Here you have an integral where Q1 is fixed. So you can put it everywhere. Yes?
Are we not integrating over Q1 in the first expression?
Pardon?
Shouldn't we be integrating over Q1 in the first line?
Instead of Q prime 1?
No, I mean in the first line, because Q1 can
be. Yes. I've not written, I forgot to write integral over Q1 here. Thank you. Yes, you are. It was written here, and I forgot to write it, but I wrote it here. Thank you. Okay, so basically, in the Heisenberg picture,
have a delta function? What happened to the delta function? Now
you have two delta functions, which amounts to give this matrix element. So the final result is this.
What you had here, what did you do with the delta function that you had on the left board?
This one gives identity operators times to the left of A, and this one gives an identity operator to the right of A. But I times, so 1 times A times identity operator is just the operator itself. You end up with this object in any case.
Wait, I'm confused. So here on this board, right, we have this D, and then we have curly A, and we have that delta function.
Yes.
And then did we integrate over that delta function in order in the second line to replace curly A of Q U of T1 with A of Q1? Did we use that delta function?
Well, we first had an integral where I had no delta function. So I have A of Q1, Q of T1. In order to derive that this initial class integral amounts to this, if you want to do the calculation carefully, you have to integrate to add a delta function and integrate over it on the left and on the right. But do it again and you'll see it works. Alternatively, you can start from this expression, which is a matrix element of operator. Insert identity operator written as identity operator equal integral over dq times q times q. Insert this here and here. Rewrite each term before integrating over dq as a path integral. And you end up with this. So I choose to start from a path integral and show that it is equal to this, but you can do the calculation in the other from this to this and check it works in both cases. So if you prefer, do the calculation starting from this, inserting an identity operator here and here, use a path integral. We started from here, so inserting a propagator for each, and you end up with this.
I'm not entirely sure how, like, so that the star equation is equivalent to.
It's not equivalent, it's equal.
It's equal to the top right line, but that has another term in it with another path integral. How did we get that?
No, you see, here you start from a path integral where you integrate from time zero to time t. And I just decompose this path integral into a first path integral times a second path integral, fixing this and then integrating over the intermediate state. And of course, it amounts to this original path integral.
Yeah.
So the basic idea is very simple. Maybe my notation were a bit too messy, but if you like, start from this, insert this here and here, write each term as a path integral, you end up with this.
Okay.
So this path integral is not equivalent, it's equal to this matrix element.
Okay.
So now let's go back to the Heisenberg picture. In the Heisenberg picture, this object can be written as just the matrix element of A at time t1 between the initial states where at time 0 you are at position q initial and the initial time and the final state where at time t final you are at the position q final. So this matrix element in the Schrödinger picture or in the Schrödinger representation, write in the Heisenberg picture as this. So this is equal to this. Just two different ways to write the same matrix element in the Schrödinger picture here. And here is the Heisenberg picture. And you see that, in fact, it's often better to think about path integral as computing matrix element in the Heisenberg picture. Because inserting, you know, in the path integral, some function of the position at a given time t amounts to compute matrix element of the operator A at time t1 in the Heisenberg picture. So changing the time at which you insert your Q of T1 amounts to just to change the time at which you apply the operator A in the Heisenberg picture. See? Okay. So that's the first nice picture, the nice property. Now, this becomes, in fact, much even more convenient if you think that do it for two operators. So instead of making a path integral, insert two operators. An operator A, at time, let's call it at time T1. Let's call it T A1. And an operator A2 at time T2. With, of course, T1 and T2 in between initial time and final time. So this is given by this picture. I have this path integral as a function of time from time 0 to time t. I start from the initial condition q1. I end up with the final condition q final. And simply, I'm computing path integrals. And simply, I am measuring, I am inserting here a1 q of t1. And here I'm inserting a2 of q of t2. So I'm measuring the function a1 of the position at time t1 here, and the position a, the function a2 at time t2. So it's a path integral with two operators inserted. Then you can play the same game, and this path integral, integral of a dq e minus I over h bar s of q, and then a1 of q at time t1 and a2 of q at time t2. This path integral with the same boundary condition gives you the matrix element in the Heisenberg representation where you have the matrix element between some initial state at time zero and some final state at time tf of a1 of t1, a2 of t2. You expect this. But this formula, in the case that I've written, is incorrect because simply here, my picture, T1 is less than T2. So if you decompose in path integral, first you compute a path integral from T initial to T1. So this is A1 of T1. Then you compute a path integral from T1 from T2. So you compute basically, no, this is A1 of T1. And now you have a2 of t2. Remember that a1 and a2 are two different functions of q. One can be q and the other one q squared, or whatever. And then you, the final path integral amounts to this. This path integral, this. This path integral gives a second a2, and the last path integral computes the matrix element, this one. Yes?
Here that you wrote that Brock u a k q one prime is delta function. That is only true when you a commutes with q because
yes so it's a large class of operator, but there are other operators, and I'm going to discuss that briefly in 5 minutes.
Is this equation more general? Even if a is not
then you have to be more careful. So for the moment, take this at take this formula when a commutes with q. I'm going to show very briefly, without calculation, what's happening for an operator which doesn't commute with Q. So what?
The result would not be the same?
It will be the same, but the operator has to be the operator has to be defined slightly differently. I come back to that, but that's a good question. Okay, so, sorry, this formula. Let me come back to this. So you see that this formula is valid if T1 is less than T2. But imagine that T2 is less than T1. Okay? So this means that T2 is there and T1 is here. So we have the same picture, same path integral, but here we have T2, we have T1, and we insert therefore A2 before A1. Path integral works everything, but what you get is, in this case, you have the matrix element between Q initial at time initial zero of A2 of T2 times A1 of T1. Okay? So you get the matrix element of a different products of operator. And in the Heisenberg picture, those operators do not commute because, you see, in the Heisenberg picture, an operator A of T is a product of evolution operator and position operator. And if you evaluate operator, if you define operator at different time, you have evolution operator at different times. And the evolution operator does not commute with the position operator because H doesn't, the initial Hamiltonian doesn't commute with Q. Remember that H doesn't commute with Q. Therefore, A of T1 and A of T2 are different from zero if T1 is different from T2. Therefore, this product is different from this one. And, but, then you are going to recognize something that you have seen in the quantum field theory course, or in the course by Dan, in the advanced quantum theory course, which is that you have two operators which are defined in the Heisenberg picture at different time. And if T1 is less than T2, you first apply to a state A1, and then you apply A2. But if T2 is less than T1, you first apply A2, and then you apply A1. And this definition is just what is defined in quantum, it's a time-ordered product of two operators. Remember, the time-ordered products which can define as T times A1, A2, A1 of T1, and A2 of T2 is by definition A1, A, I'm sorry, A1 times A, well, A2 times A1 if T2 is less than T1, and A2 apply to A1 if T1 is less than T2. Okay, so this is just a matrix element of the time ordered products of those two operators. So in other words, path integrals by construction gives you time ordered product of operator.
There's no time mapping on the left hand side, like the path integral thing, but we have it on
no,
the
yes. So in the path integral, you are integrating you know, numbers, of course. Here you don't need, you can write A1 times A2 or A2 of E1, because for each trajectory, this is, this commutes. But nevertheless, in the path integral, you do this, then this, and this, or this, 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 this. So the path integral, the results of the path integration, give something which is the matrix element of time ordered products.
Why are we allowed to do this? We're just working with scalars and then we're promoting them to operators whenever we want.
No, it's not what I want. The basic idea of path integrals is that path integrals is a way to compute matrix element of operators.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so the functions there are matrix elements?
No, the function in the path integrals are just random variables. They are numbers.
Yeah, so are they the entries of the matrix?
No. These are the entries of the operator in the Schrödinger picture, where the operator commutes. But the path integrals compute the matrix element of operators in the Heisenberg picture at a given time, which depends at which time you insert the position operator in the path integral. So there is nothing, contradictory in that.
No, I'm not saying it's so. What I want to see if I understand this correctly. So those curly A's are entries of the matrix.
Yes.
That's why they're numbers.
No. They are numbers. Yes. Yeah. They are numbers.
Okay.
And they commute. They are just real numbers.
No, I thought you were promoting
them. No. I'm not promoting them. The operator. The recipe is that path integrals computes matrix element of time ordered products of operator. And that's, that's the way it works.
Thank you.
And if you think a bit about it, that's the only possibilities, because you compute the path integrals and depends whether you first compute this element. But you see, there is a quantum propagation from there to there, and then from there to there, and from there to there. And the path integrals are a way to define quantum to compute quantum propagation, evolution operator. So by, it's a feature. It's not. By definition, the path integral constructs matrix element of operators, and these operators, if they are defined by applying random variable at different time, this is the time ordered products of the operator by construction. And that's going to be very important in quantum field theory. In ordinary quantum mechanics, you do even quantum information or cold atom physics or condensed matter. Usually, you don't care much about time ordered products of operators because they are not the most physically important quantities. But in quantum field theory, they are. Okay. So, this is the. If there is something to remember about path integrals, it's this. Okay. Let me finish before we make. Now, of course, we can do exactly the same thing. Oh, no, this one. Well, you can play the same game for Euclidean path integral, but in Euclidean path integrals, there is another more interesting feature, which is that path integrals at Euclidean time. Let me finish my sentence and then I answer. So I'm going to explain that path integrals at Euclidean time are a way to construct the partition function of a quantum system at finite temperature. Okay, so now, no question?
We could practically calculate that integral by writing the operators in a non-time ordered order, right? We could just calculate dq into action. A2, A1.
You cannot do that. the way I wrote, if you want to have products of operator which are not time ordered, in some sense, you have to go back in time. You see? If the operator are not time ordered, but they are anti-time ordered, then you can define a path integrals, but you have to go back in time. And going back in time means replacing u of t, the evolution operator, by its Hermitian conjugate, by u of minus t, which is u dagger of t. And you can define u dagger of t by a path integral, but the path integral for u dagger of t involves a minus I action s, the trajectory, which is a more complicated object. So you can do that in path integral method, but it amounts to deal with time and phase factor, which are positive and negative.
It's
just not the time order. So if you have a physical problem where you have to compute anti-ordered,
like if I want to product of the trajectories between point QI and QF, like why I cannot have trajectories that go back in time?
You are computing a different object. If you want to do a path integrals where, in some sense, you do a path integrals from there to there, then you go back in time, then you go back in time, you are computing a different object. And an object that I'm not considering in this lecture. So I prefer to stop there, but we can discuss, because in fact, it's related to something called in, which is mostly used in condensed matter and non-equilibrium quantum system, which is called either the Schwinger formalism or the double time formalism or the Schwinger-Keldysh formalism. So, where one can do so. Your question is relevant for something which is more advanced. Okay, so let me go back to this. What is a quantum partition function? I think you have seen this in the quantum theory course. Consider the same system here, a particle in the potential. So the same Hamiltonian, H equal P squared over 2m E of Q. So you have your quantum system, which is a particle in the potential. It has some energy level. But you couple it with a big classical thermostat with temperature capital T. Okay, and you know that in quantum statistical physics, if you have an energy eigenstate, let's call it I, but that H of I equal EI, I, these are the energy level, the probability P of I to be in the state I is just given by the Boltzmann factor, so it's exponential of minus beta E of I divided by a normalization factor, which is called the partition function, which depends on beta. So, of course, beta is 1 over Boltzmann constant times the temperature. And in order for the probability to be to sum to 1, D of beta is just sum over all the eigenstate or energy level of exponential of minus beta EI. In fact, this is classical thermodynamics. Now, of course, in a quantum system, this is just sum over I of the matrix element I exponential minus beta H I. Okay? But remember that you can rewrite this as the trace of E minus beta H. Now, H is an operator. E minus beta H is a positive definite Hermitian operator. And in simple system, it has a trace. So the partition function is just the trace of the exponential of the Hamiltonian. That's quantum equilibrium. That is called mechanics. Okay. But now we have seen that the matrix element of exponential of the Hamiltonian are given by a path integral, but an Euclidean path integral. So you can rewrite the trace instead of writing the trace as the sum of the diagonal element in the basis of eigenstate of the Hamiltonian, we can rewrite the trace in any basis. So we can rewrite the trace as integral of a dq and the we can rewrite this as a, the sum of the diagonal matrix element of exponential of minus beta times the Hamiltonian in the position eigenstate. The trace doesn't depend on the base which you compute the trace. So this is a trace in energy eigenstate, and this is a trace in position eigenstate. But we know that this can be computed by Euclidean path integral. And this is just integral of a dq, but an Euclidean path integrals of exponential of minus 1 over h bar s Euclidean of q with the boundary condition. Now, what are the boundary conditions? Here, I have to use as initial and final condition the same position q. So I have that q at time sigma equals 0 has to be q, and q at the final time tau is q. So I am doing a path integral in Euclidean time from 0 to tau, where I start from a point, I end up with the same point. Now remember, what is the relation between beta and tau that we wrote last time? Beta is tau over h bar. This is Euclidean time. Okay, but beta is formulated in terms of the temperature of the original system. Okay, so this is given by a path integral where you have fixed boundary initial and final condition, but then you integrate over it. So in other words, z of beta is just this path integral where you just, since you integrate over q, you may forget about q. The only constraint on the path integrals is that q of 0 is equal to q over tau with the tau related to beta and to the temperature by this relation. So in other words, tau is h bar over Boltzmann constant times the temperature. And this is the path integral in Euclidean time. And the only constraint is that it is periodic in the Euclidean time. So this is a periodic path integral in Euclidean time. And the relation between, and the period is tau. the path has to come back to the same point. No? So Euclidean time is periodic. Okay. So partition functions for a quantum system at equilibrium can be computed by path integral methods by just the path integral in Euclidean time, but Euclidean time is periodic, so Euclidean time has to come back to itself. Of course, it's Euclidean time, it's not physical time, so we are not in a theory of eternal return in real time, like there are in some philosophy or in some work by Nietzsche. But this is something which is very important. Yes?
I don't understand why we don't have an integral over dq in that expression of z of theta.
We have an integral over dq here.
Yeah, but
no, because I replace the integral over dq by just a constraint, that periodicity constraint. So I enforce a periodic constraint, but q can be anything. So you sum over all paths, all trajectories in Euclidean time. The only constraint is that the trajectory has to be periodic with a period tau. But you don't fix the initial point. You just enforce that the final point has to be equal to the initial point. You see? And then the integral over q is just the integral over the initial condition.
Isn't the initial point also not fixed because the q over there is running over all from minus?
The q is not fixed because I'm integrating over q, and I'm integrating over the q because I'm taking the trace.
Yeah, that's right. But then here you are fixing your q initial and imposing that q final should be q initial, like in the second expression. Are we fixing q initial and imposing that q final should be q initial?
You have to enforce that because you are taking the trace. So you are computing matrix element where initial and final state are the same, but then you sum over all possible. So you take the sum over the diagonal element of this operator.
So should we not like write that expression in the second integral that we are summing over all q initial?
I wrote it and then I remove the q. If you are a bit confused.
He's saying don't fix q.
Maybe I was a bit too. I wrote that z of beta is integral over dq, and then a path integral, Euclidean path integral, minus 1 over h bar se of q, with a constraint that q of 0 is called q of tau equal q. Okay? And I can rewrite this by just removing, writing that instead of enforcing constraint and then integrating over the constraint, I write this as integral over du of q minus 1 over h bar s of q, with only the constraint is that q of 0 equal q of tau. That's what I did.
How are these two exactly the same thing? Because here that is a function of q. What you get at the end is a function of q, but this integral is from minus infinity to infinity, and you get a number, let's say.
Yes. Well, in Gauss case, this is a number. I integrate, this is a number which depends on q, and I integrate over q.
Yeah, but this thing is dependent on a q.
No, because you integrate, q is a trajectory. I integrate over the trajectories. I'm sorry, yeah. Maybe my notation is a bit different. This q means a trajectory. So a function which to sigma between 0 and tau associate a q of sigma. This is a functional of a function, and this is the initial condition. So if you prefer, let's write it q0. Yeah, if you prefer, write it that way. So So my initial condition is called Q0. It's or QI. I fix it with the same thing as Q0. And then I write it like that. If this is what confuses you. Yes?
Okay, so I see like the mathematical analogy between, you know, statistical mechanics and you know, quantum field theory, but I'm not quite understanding like the intuitive side of like what it really means. Like, okay, so in statistical physics, okay, so we have a path integral that's periodic, but what does that mean?
It's a mathematical analogy, but so it's a very useful analogy.
So there's no like physical intuition we can gain about statistical mechanics from this analogy?
In some case, you can get physical intuition in statistical mechanics, and in some case, you can get physical intuition in quantum theory out of the analogy in quantum statistical physics.
What would be some physical intuition we could gain from seeing, like writing this as a path integral, like a periodic path integral?
It depends on the system. But I know some problems where this analogy gives a very useful intuition. But it depends on the problem.
Okay.
One very nice example is the phenomenon of black holes, quantum black holes evaporation, and the fact that quantum black holes have a Bekenstein-Hawking entropy. So they have a temperature. But I think sometimes it was an exercise or a tutorial. I can explain just with words. In general relativity, the De Sitter solution for the De Sitter metric for black holes is a particular metric in Minkowski spacetime, and it describes spacetime with an horizon and the future and the past and the future singularity. Okay, now you can transform time in the De Sitter metric into Euclidean time. You get a metric which is now an Euclidean metric. So time has become Euclidean. So the metric is this famous diagram. This famous Feynman diagram where here you have your singularity. Here you have your past singularity. So this is black hole metric. If you go in Euclidean time, you get a space-time which has somehow this form. This is Euclidean time. The horizon here becomes the tip of some kind of cigar geometry. So this is the horizon. This point, this is spatial infinity. This is Euclidean time. And if you work out the solution, it's just a calculation of transforming, taking the De Sitter metric and transforming t into an imaginary quantity, rewriting things, seeing what is the geometry of these things. It turns out that Euclidean time is periodic. That's a feature of the solution. And what is a period?
Is that like a closed time like curve?
The period tau, which is a period at spatial infinity, turns out to be nothing but h bar of a Boltzmann constant times the Bekenstein-Hawking temperature of the black hole, which depends on the mass. So that's an analogy where this strange mathematical fact that a system which has a periodicity in Euclidean time, in fact, corresponds to a quantum system which has a highly non-trivial temperature.
And is that would you consider that to be an actual physical time, and it's related to the temperature of the black hole?
No. Well, Euclidean time is never an actual physical time. It's an analytic continuation in the complex plane of the physical time.
Okay.
It's never, as far as I know, a physical time. But nevertheless, you have a very useful mathematical analogy, and therefore you can use mathematics to to get picture, physical picture in your mind and to make argument and reasoning. So that's an example where periodicity in Euclidean time, or a system which is a priori, you know, highly non-trivial and non correspond to a temperature in a quantum system, which was the first discovered and calculated by completely different mean. So this is the magic of Euclidean, or one example of the magic of Euclidean time.
Very interesting.
And magic means mathematics. So, sometimes, you know, rigorous, you know, completely logical magic. And therefore, magic that you can apply. I think this, there's a nice short book by Neil Turok. Have you, I think it's a series of conference, and one of the conference about physics and science is the magic that works. And the magic that works is mathematics. And that's mathematics because mathematics is the language of physics. And the fact that mathematics is the language of physics is a sentence by Galileo. So it's idea. Goes back to old time and possibly to Aristoteles. Okay. Okay. So, well, my plan was to stop at 11:30 and to have a break. So it went. But thanks for all your questions. I'm going to ask, so maybe you can make, either we continue or we make a short break, but very short, 2 minutes. But simply what I'd like to, for you to remember is those two ideas, that fast integrals built out time-ordered products of operator, and that in quantum statistical mechanics, temperature is related to the periodicity of Euclidean time by this relation.
Can I just ask a question?
Now it's a break. Yes?
The chronology comes that we can like have a periodicity of we should first define a periodicity of Euclidean time, and then we can have this mathematical analogy to a statistical.
Yeah, I think so.
So when are we, like, in what situation we can have this periodicity?
When you study quantum statistical mechanics at equilibrium, thermal equilibrium, thermal equilibrium, which is very specific,
what is the direction of arrow? We should first assume that, like, we should first.
It's a double arrow. We usually, when you have a quantum system which at Euclidean time is periodic, a quantum theory, it corresponds to some quantum theory at equilibrium.
So if we assume that there is an analogy, we can always get a periodic Euclidean time, something like that.
That I'm not.
Partition function just as we write it.
Okay, let us later. I'm not sure I can understand quickly to your question. Okay? Yes?
In this analogy, you have beta equals tau over h bar. And then we're also writing the Euclidean action in terms of the physical Hamiltonian.
Yes.
So it would be H Euclidean equals H is the analogy.
The analogy goes between this parameter in a problem which is Euclidean periodic Euclidean path integral and this temperature, which is the physical temperature of a quantum system at thermal equilibrium. The analogy is with that, but I don't think it's a good idea to look for a too strong analogy between Euclidean action and real-time action, or between Lagrangian and Hamiltonian. It's a mathematical, there is a mathematical dictionary between the two, but better think of it as a dictionary than as an analogy.
Yes, my question was exactly like, if I was going to solve the question in StatMech, what would be the mathematical replacement for SE?
In which case?
Like we said that if we wanted to solve the StatMech problem with temperature T, we would think of it as a path integral using this equivalence between tau and beta.
Yes, but then you use just the Euclidean action that if you know the real time Lagrangian and therefore the real time action. You can write an Euclidean action.
Okay.
It's not the same object.
Okay, so you use the Hamiltonian.
But if you know, yeah, okay. You start from the, Hamiltonian contains a kinetic time-dependent part and a potential time-independent part, well, time derivative independent part. Any quantum system, as soon as it is local in space and time, contains a term involving time derivatives of physical observable, or momenta, if you prefer, and configuration variable, term that doesn't depend on derivative of time. Out of that, you can construct an Euclidean action, because there is a dictionary.
Because in the notes, you identified h bar with temperature and Euclidean action was Hamiltonian.
Yeah, so if you think about that, you see that basically H-bar plays in a quantum system the role of temperature in a statistical system. And this you can understand. I think you are going to see that in the statistical mechanical structure. You know, in a quantum system, you have quantum fluctuations because there are some uncertainty relation. In a statistical system at finite temperature, you have thermal fluctuation. So this dictionary tells that, not in all problems, but in many problems, you can treat and think about quantum fluctuation in the same language that statistical thermal fluctuation. It doesn't mean that quantum fluctuation have a thermal origin or that thermal fluctuation have just a quantum origin. But it means that the language we allow to compute and to think about them sometimes is the same. So you can use analogies to go from one quantum system to a problem which is the problem of statistical mechanics. Fluctuation have, for some of their property, quantum fluctuation and thermal fluctuation have analogous feature. Although they have a different physical origin.
I think the question is related to, we should choose Hamiltonian is T minus B or minus T plus B. T minus B or minus T plus B. Because if we change time imaginary, then if we just plug into the terms, it gives extra minus sign. Other, but if we also do a Legendre transformation from the Lagrangian, we define this way.
Okay, I'm not sure I understand exactly. So let's discuss later, because I'm not sure I get what you, and it's going to, we still have well, 15 minutes. I would like to start to discuss now quantum theory for next lecture. So that's basically all what I wanted to say about path integral method in non-relativistic system. But remember that there are a lot of features and one could, device a full course on path integral methods. Okay, so we keep this, and for the purpose of next lecture, I'm going to introduce you to quantum field theory. Oops. So now, quantum field theory. And I'm going to follow the same logic that what you did in the previous lecture, that I'm first going to discuss the simplest quantum field theory, which is a quantum field theory with no spin. No charge, and therefore that's a theory that I call the scalar field. Scalar means that it has no internal degrees of freedom. And the simplest case of a scalar field is a field with no interaction either. And in that case, this is what is called the Klein Gordon field, or the free field in in the Sanda language of quantum field theory. Okay. So this field, remember, now I'm dealing with a quantum field theory. So I have a space-time with a Poincaré invariance. And if I am in D dimension, let's call, for instance, if we are comparing 4 equal 1 plus 3 dimension, a space-time vector that writing x is just as some component x0, x, this is x mu. So this is time, and this is space. And since I have a Poincaré invariance, there is Lorentz transformation, and which preserves the line element. That's, you know, standard relativity. And the line element is going to be, and here, be careful, in all my lecture for both, you know, preference and some habits, I'm using this signature. In other words, I'm using the signature of space-time, which is minus, plus, plus, plus if I am in 3 plus 1 dimension. So this signature is, of course, life is not nice. So it is the opposite signature that the signature that Dan and Gang have been using in their course. It's useful to know this signature, which is not this signature. Because depending on the textbooks and the lecturer, you can meet this signature and this signature. And unless I'm mistaken with geography, this signature is called the East Coast metric. And this signature is called the West Coast metric. Well, for historical reasons, that comes back to this French tribes, which lives a bit south of your country, a nice country. And so some famous books have been written on the East Coast, and some other famous books using this metric has been written in the West Coast. But of course, the opposite is true. Okay, so I'm going to use this signature all along the course. But of course, you know, when you compute, you get the same physical result at the end. It's just a choice of how to define the metric and the normalization. Okay, so in this signature, so that's the one that I'm going to use. Well, one of the reasons I'm going to use it is that in my research, I've been doing a lot of statistical mechanics. And in this East Coast metric, if you make this V quotation, where time, write it as minus I times Euclidean time. So doing a V quotation from physical time to tau. Remember, this is called the V quotation. Dt squared, of course, becomes minus d tau squared. And therefore, d squared becomes the Euclidean line element, which is d tau squared plus d squared, which is the Euclidean line element in Euclidean, in four-dimensional Euclidean space-time. In some sense, if you choose, you know, to make complex one parameter, better keep the other one consistent with what we are doing. Okay. So now, if you like to be, for instance, now your space-time, you know, your Euclidean space-time, your Minkowski space-time here, has two directions, or 1 plus 3. It has space, it has time, physical time, this is time, and this is space. Okay. Performing a Vic rotation means that time lives in the blackboard plane, and space lives in this horizontal plane. So think of the plane as a complex plane. Doing a Vic rotation means going to Euclidean time like that, but you have not touched space. So Euclidean space-time is a plane which is orthogonal to the blackboard. So Minkowski space is a horizontal plane, and Euclidean space-time is a vertical space-time. Okay, keep that picture. And of course, in Minkowski space-time, you have light cone with future, past, and space perspective. In Euclidean space-time, the light cone becomes just a point. It's the origin. And Lorentz rotation, Lorentz transformation becomes just rotation around the origin. So in Euclidean space-time, Lorentz becomes rotation. Okay. So now what is this? So now go back to let me just write the Lagrangian and the action for the scalar free field. So what is the classical scalar field? What is the classical? I'm sorry. All by Gordon scalar field. Okay. So the scalar field is just a field that we usually denote at phi. So it's a real variable. So to a point in space time, you associate phi of x, the value of the field in space time. It's a continuous variable, which is a real number. Real. Okay. And now what is the classical action? The classical actions with this choice signature is S of phi. And remember, x is contains time variable and x variable. So the classical action now, instead of being given by integral of a time only, is an integral of a time and an integral of a space variable, because we are doing quantum field theory. And this is, it contains a kinetic term which contains time derivative, and this kinetic term is 1/2 of dt I squared. This is the derivative with respect to t. So it's a real variable, so it's a function of both time and space. And then you have a potential variable which may involve derivative, but no derivative of time. So this is minus 1/2 of the gradient with respect to phi squared plus the term of the mass phi squared. So this is Lagrangian. Here I am in D dimension, well, in the space dimension. Here I'm integral over time. So this is a kinetic term. And this is a potential term. And this is a mass square. And from the Lagrange principle, and see that the classical equation of motion are just the Klein-Gordon equation. These are d over dt squared minus the Laplacian with respect to x plus m squared of phi equals zero, which are the Klein-Gordon equation. Okay. And I'm going to do one remark. M is called the mass, but it plays a different role than in non-relativistic quantum mechanics. In non-relativistic quantum mechanics, the kinetic terms is m over 2 times the square of the time derivative. It is the mass of the non-relativistic particle. Here, the mass is a term in the potential energy. So the mass is rather a frequency. So mass, this is not the mass field. It's rather a kind of frequency and or pulsation rather. And in fact, this is the mass of the one particle state excitation of the quantum field, as you have seen in Tan introduction by canonical quantization. Okay.
Sorry.
Yes?
So from the rotation that you did, you said the Lorentz transformations become rotations, but is that an exact claim? Because you have three rotations when you have three space dimensions, but now you have four space dimensions.
Yeah, so the Lorentz, you know, the Lorentz group.
Six Lorentz generators become four rotations.
No, because here. The Lorentz group is a Lorentz group in one plus three dimension. This SO transformation in four dimension and in three dimension.
Yeah.
You have three
that's
rotation, but in four dimension, you have six. It's on that group theory. So here you have, so in some sense, the Lorentz group, at least the positive Lorentz group is that is equivalent to SO 1 3, something like that. And it has a six generator. And here it has six generator. The commutation relation between the generator are not the same, but they are obtained from one to the other one by changing changing some signs. Okay. Okay. So, okay, so this is the action. So there is an Hamiltonian, and the Hamiltonian is just an Hamiltonian density where you have the kinetic term plus the potential term.
Can I ask you?
Yes?
Can you explain a little bit more why they call that transformation frequency?
Because when you have, think about a harmonic oscillator. So an harmonic oscillator, it's a quantum non-relativistic system. So in some sense, this is a system where you have one time and no space direction with what it. So an harmonic oscillator, the Hamiltonian, is just, or if you prefer, the Lagrangian of an harmonic oscillator. The Lagrangian of this generator is m over 2. Q squared minus m over 2 omega squared q squared, where omega is the frequency of the oscillator. Now, we write q as phi. Or rather, rewrite Q as 1 over square root of m I. The Lagrangian becomes 1 half of phi dot squared minus omega squared over 2 I squared. So this is, we write omega as m. So the harmonic oscillator is just but a scalar free field in 1 + 0 dimension. That's why it corresponds to a frequency. Well, so I think I'm done. Just one last thing. Play with the same game for Euclidean theory. In Euclidean theory, now you have a field that depends on tau and x.
Sorry, Rachel. You said kg field in 1 + what? Is that 1 +?
Can you bring the board a little bit to?
Because you see, what you call dimension in non-relativistic quantum mechanics, it's a dynamical variable, the position of the particle. In quantum field theory, the dynamical variable are the field phi, not the position. In quantum field theory, variable. And in fact, it's not surprising. In non-relativistic quantum mechanics, time is not a dynamical variable. We have no operator corresponding to what is the time of a particle. You cannot make an apparatus, a measurement apparatus that measures the time of a quantum system. You can measure the position of a quantum system, you can measure the momentum of a quantum system, but you cannot measure the time of the quantum system. You can measure, of course, at which time some phenomenon occurs, but for that you have to do a measurement at a given time. So now, in a quantum field theory, in relativistic quantum mechanics, you want the position is promoted to the same level than time, because we have Lorentz invariance. So now the position is not a dynamical variable of a quantum system anymore, but exactly like time. The dynamical variables are the values of the field and their derivative. So you have seen in canonical quantization that when you quantize, phi becomes an operator hat, and the derivative of phi becomes an operator which is a momentum, the field, momentum operator. Okay.
Sorry, I don't understand the concept. You're saying that your phi is dynamical, but your x isn't. But when you're promoting your x to an operator.
Yeah. No, there is no operator corresponding to the position in a quantum field theory.
There isn't, but in regular quantum mechanics.
In quantum mechanics, that's because it's non-relativistic.
Yeah.
So one uses the same name for different objects.
Okay.
In non-relativistic quantum mechanics, the position of an operator is a physical observable. I'm sorry, the position of a particle, the position of a simple quantum system like a particle, is an observable of the theory. At a given time, you may ask, where is this particle in space? And I look for it, I have some detection measurement, and I measure where is the position of a particle. That's what's done daily in high energy physics, in accelerator. But that's because we are looking at a particle, not at a field. A field is a much more complicated quantum object than a single particle.
Okay.
So one uses the same word for very good reason, position, but physically they do not correspond to the same kind of objects. In a quantum theory, the observable are the fields. They are extended objects.
How do you observe the field?
Well, you can measure present. You can measure, you know, the value of the field at a. You can measure what's the value of the field at a given point area of space-time. But you know, in general, the field corresponds to a current, what's called the current states of many particle states. So in general, when you observe, if you have an operator that defines what which is associated to the value of the field, you measure the number of particles.
Yeah. Yeah.
For instance, in a quantum theory, I'm not doing any quantum theory, but in a quantum theory, phi squared at a given point x of space and time, this is an operator. So it's a square of an operator. This corresponds to the particle density at the space-time x equal tx. And this is, in general, in quantum theory, the number of particles fluctuates as quantum fluctuation. Therefore, what you can measure, these operators correspond to measuring what is the expectation value of the total number of particles at a given point in space-time or given quantum states.
Should that be zero, for example, for vacuum?
For the vacuum, that's zero. Well, up to quantum fluctuation of the vacuum. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, because the vacuum is defined and the states where there are no particles. So you have quantum fluctuation.
What is the variances of particles permutatively going?
Oops, sorry. Sorry, I have to, okay, sorry.
But in vacuum, you can't have particles coming into existence and then.
Yeah, but those are fluctuations. You have particles and antiparticle pairs.
Expectation value of phi squared. Isn't that directly correlated to the variance?
Not directly, because. Not directly, because I think you have seen with Dan that in order to define products of a field operator, you have some singularity, so you need to define some normal product of operators.
Oh.
Maybe you remember.
Yeah.
And if you define the correct normal ordered product of phi squared, its expectation value in the field is zero.
The expectation value of this thing?
You can define a normal product so that its expectation value in the vacuum is zero. So the vacuum is defined by the fact that phi of zero is zero. But if you take just a product of two phi, you run into subtleties, let's say, not difficulties, but subtleties related to the quantum nature of quantum field. But.
Yeah.
There are quantum fluctuations of the number of particles, but you cannot just probe them by looking at the vacuum and seeing whether some particles pop out. Virtual particles in a quantum, in a high energy physics occurs when you probe the system.
Sorry, I might have forgotten something, but can you write the variance of the number of particles in vacuum, assuming that you have a...
Probably, but I have to think about it or ask Dan. But the average number of particles, which correspond to an operator like phi squared, is zero in the vacuum. The vacuum is defined as a state where there are no particles.
Even the variance is zero?
In the vacuum, I think so. But this variance being properly defined as phi squared, I think so.
So not only the mean is zero, but also the variance? Is completely zero fluctuations, because if there is by definition there has to be a non-zero variance, because it's very
But if something fluctuates, if something has a mean zero and has a variance non-zero, it means that it can take it can take negative and positive value, and you cannot have in a scalar theory a theory with no spin and no charge, you cannot have a negative number of particles in the vacuum.
Oh, right.
You see?
Yeah, so that's
very so pi squared corresponds to the number of particles somewhere. So the variance should correspond to a phi squared times phi squared operator, I think. I'm not on completely safe ground because I'm not used to think in that way. But we'll discuss that operator later in the course. But the variance of a number of particles should correspond to something like that. So a higher dimensional operator. Okay. But I'd rather stop. Yes.
That the normal ordering of that thing is zero, isn't that a contraction of, doesn't that give you a vacuum problem?
I'll discuss a bit that if I have time, but later on, once we have quantized by path integral method, I think you'll see that either. So at that level, I've been just presenting what is a classical field, and now next lecture on Friday, I'm going to see how you quantize it using path integral method, but you already quantize it using canonical quantization. So I'm going to discuss the relation and the equivalence between the two. And if we discuss that, this will be at a higher, further step when we'll know what we're talking about. Okay. Did I say something not completely wrong, I hope, about the number of particles? So Dan seems to be not unhappy. Okay. Ah, yeah, no, I was just going to write the Euclidean action, the analog of Euclidean action. But basically, I presume you are hungry, but it's the same, exactly the same receipt. So you replace time by Euclidean time, which is written here, and then the Euclidean action now is instead of being the integral of a space-time of the difference between the kinetic action and the potential action, it's a kinetic term, but now it's derivative with respect to Euclidean time plus yes. That's it. So a nice aspect of the path integral method, and for many things, you know already the rule for quantum mechanics, you just apply them to a relativistic system. The difficulties come later, but when you have difficulties, they come from the quantum nature of quantum field, not just for the mathematical formalism you are using. So replace this by a plus, replace time integrals and time derivative by integral over Euclidean time, and you have the Euclidean action, which is useful if for some problem, like doing studying a quantum field in a finite temperature. Okay, so see you on Friday.